Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. New York State's finances will suffer for years to come, and there are likely to be big cuts to schools and local governments because of the coronavirus pandemic. That's according to a new report released by Governor Cuomo's budget office. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt has more.
The report finds a $13.3 billion shortfall in this year's budget, with a $61 billion structural deficit over the next 4 years. An assessment commissioned by the Boston Consulting Group predicts the state's economy will lose a staggering $243 billion over the course of the pandemic and the economic recovery. That's 14% of the state's gross domestic product. And the recovery will be longer and deeper than the Great Recession of over a decade ago. Cuomo commented briefly on Friday.
And what you're going to see is what we expected.
The financial report also predicts the state will have to slash $10.1 billion from the current budget, leading to over $8 billion in cuts to schools, healthcare providers, and local governments. The governor's budget director, Robert Mujica, says the decisions on specific cuts will be made in the next couple of weeks. He says it will be in time for schools to make the hard decisions before their annual budgets are due.
Between now and May 15th, we'll have more clarity and more specificity in the financial plan. Right now, we're letting you know this is where we stand, this is where the revenue picture is, those are the facts, and by the time they put their school budget votes together, they will have those numbers.
Some Democrats in the legislature have proposed raising taxes on the wealthy to avoid deep cuts. David Friedfeld with the watchdog group Citizens Budget Commission says with the massive shortfall, it's sensible to first curtail spending. Friedfeld, speaking via Skype, says it's also difficult to raise revenues 4 months into the fiscal year when there's almost no money coming into the economy.
It's a delicate balance. The state already is a high-tax state. The state, we do need to worry about our long-term competitiveness. At the same time, many of these cuts would be very severe. We want to make sure that we preserve the public health system, obviously, during a global pandemic.
Friedfeld credits Cuomo's budget office for holding on to New York's relatively small rainy day fund for now. He says it will be needed next year when the financial picture is expected to be even worse. He says much will depend on whether there is a fourth federal bailout package that addresses state and local governments' budget shortfalls. Recently, U.S. Senate Leader Mitch McConnell suggested that states should instead consider declaring bankruptcy, comments that enraged Governor Cuomo. Cuomo, speaking Monday, continued to press for the money, saying the funds represent the jobs of essential workers.
Police, fire, school teachers, and hospital workers. How can you exclude them when you're talking about priorities?
Meanwhile, a new poll from Siena College finds that Cuomo's approval ratings for the job he's doing in office are at an all-time high with 71%, and that New Yorkers by a 3-to-1 margin trust Cuomo over President Trump to get them through the pandemic. Siena's Steve Greenberg says Trump, who's never been popular in the president's home state, has seen his ratings further decline.
Voters say they trust Governor Cuomo more than they trust President Trump.
The poll also found half of New Yorkers know someone who has had the virus. One-third of them know someone who has died from the disease. Half of all households have someone working from home now. One-third have a household member who has lost their job. There's overwhelming support for Cuomo's stay-at-home and business and school shutdown orders and on the requirement to wear masks in public. But no one, though, is optimistic about life getting back to normal anytime soon. Two-thirds believe it's unlikely there will be large gatherings like concerts, sporting events, or graduation parties this summer, and the same number say even if they were to be held, they would be reluctant to go. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, this week, Jesse McKinley, New York Times Albany bureau chief, had a story in the paper that was a bit critical of the governor.
The headline, "Governors Don't Do Global Pandemics, Cuomo Faults Others Over Virus," accusing various world and federal health groups, as well as the news media, including the New York Times, of not sufficiently warning the world of the coronavirus outbreak.
Well, he did go after the Times and everybody else for not having done their jobs. Look, Andrew Cuomo is doing remarkably well. He's reached heroic status with so many people. And the few outliers out there are very unhappy. Yet Cuomo is working very hard, burning the candle at both ends. He has to be careful. This Times article by Jesse McKinley is not flattering, and I'm sure Cuomo is not happy about it. But, you know, if you attack the Times, if you attack the news media, they're going to bite your back. There is no question about that. I've seen it 1,000 times. So Cuomo's tired. You know, he works incredibly hard. He works early in the morning and he works all day long, and he even finds time for us here at WAMC. But you have to be careful not to go too far and not to put yourself in a position where you are inevitably going to burn out.
And he faces a lot of tough choices, right, Alan? I mean, we're already hearing about major cuts to the system. Oh, that's not going to make people happy. They're going to say, come on now, tax the rich, do something more progressive.
Sure. 20% cut in education. You can imagine all those people who work for school districts, all those people who are depending on their jobs. And if you're the school superintendent or the school board, you probably have to make some cuts, and that's going to hurt.
Let's stick with Jesse McKinley after we spoke about his article. The conversation you had with him this week went toward the governor and his popularity that he's developed as a result of his handling of the coronavirus pandemic. 77% approve favorable in the last Siena Research Institute poll. And you discussed whether that inevitably that number is going to come down because of the economic pain coming.
Well, there are those who think it will, that, you know, New York State is going to, for example, have to cut education grants to the various localities by 20 to 25%. Well, that means a lot of people are going to get fired and laid off, and that's not going to be easy to absorb. I think the governor knows it. I think he knows he's facing it. But, you know, his whole approach has been tell the truth. The truth can't hurt you. Everybody knows where this country is, and everybody knows that compared to Trump, Cuomo is doing a terrific job. He gets out there. He's factual. He can be funny. He can create a sense of togetherness. He's done all of that, and that's why people like him. So I don't know that it's necessary that his numbers go down. It's possible.
Well, the governor's getting some heat for the canceling of the presidential primary.
Look, there are a lot of people who think an election is an election. You shouldn't cancel them. He said people's lives are more important than, you know, this crowding. Wisconsin, they stood in line and they waited and they took great chances. And that is something that this governor has been really very afraid of. However, what I'm afraid of is that Donald Trump, who many people think is not going to win this election, comes up with an excuse to postpone that election, says, look, they did it in New York.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A Newburgh, New York-based company has avoided layoffs and possibly going out of business by changing gears during the COVID-19 pandemic. It all started with a Facebook post that connected one of the company's executives with a friend who works for a nonprofit organization in need of personal protective equipment. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn brings us the story.
Orange Packaging is a design, engineering, and manufacturing facility for point-of-purchase displays for many Fortune 500 companies. With so many retail stores closed during the coronavirus pandemic, orders for such displays eroded. Michael Esposito, vice president of Orange Packaging, saw a need for personal protective equipment, or PPE. He says the company his grandfather started has the machinery to be able to produce plastic parts to make face shields.
So my brother is the designer, and he went in and designed the face shield. And I went and got our first one, and I just happened to come home, and I put it on Facebook to show my local Facebook group, like, hey, if anybody, I know some of my friends are nurses, or, you know, we've made some of these if you need them. And from there, it just exploded. I mean, it's literally the story you hear where I guess I've experienced my first viral moment, but it went everywhere. And everybody started calling us more on a personal level at first. It was the nurses that were friends of friends that were calling us and showing up at our door with, you know, this panic look in their eyes. And we just started donating them to whoever we could. And at the same time, we realized that we needed to continue to make money to keep our company going, because our main business was in retail. It was drying up. Everybody obviously was closing. All the retail stores were closing. And we were and still are somewhat in a panic mode of what's going to happen. So fast forward to Facebook again. And Linda Cerdo, who works at Access, said, hey, I think you should bring one up here and show my president of my company. And we did. He didn't like our first prototype. And he gave us some recommendations. My brother went back to the drawing board, made a new version, which was more comfortable. That was the president of Access's main goal. He's like, these won't be comfortable for my healthcare workers. So we made a new version. He loved it, and he bought 20,000. And we just were blown away. And from there, it just springboarded us into going to other healthcare facilities and hospitals. And to date, we've produced over 100,000 face shields in two different versions. And we've also have started to develop, in conjunction with an ICU doctor, different medical devices, procedural devices that they're asking us to make. So we're in development right now with those. So we kind of see it as a whole new healthcare division within our company.
The new path was blazed in March.
Would have never planned it, would have never expected it. And we're just kind of adapting on the fly to keep our company going. We haven't laid off one person since this has all started. We have 74 employees.
And he credits Access Supports for Living, a nonprofit organization that offers disability and mental health services in the Hudson Valley, for being able to keep them on the payroll. Ron Colavito is Access president and CEO.
We ordered the first 5,000 order to help not just our staff at Access, but we have also been doing a lot of work sourcing PPE for a number of our partner organizations, both in developmental disabilities and the behavioral health space. So we had our own needs and uses, but I think we ended up buying over 6,000 when all was said and done, and distributed another probably about 5,000 of those to probably about 20 different organizations that had needs throughout the region and into New York City.
He says there is still a need among certain organizations, especially smaller ones.
You know, many of these community organizations that are working with folks in group homes or are still providing clinical supports for mental health, we're not getting the same prioritization as the hospitals and other areas. So we're not able to tap the resources that are coming through government the same way. So really it's required a lot of partnership and consolidation to get these things to happen. So finding a partner like Mike has been absolutely fantastic. We've also done some work with some of the local distilleries to work on bringing in hand sanitizer.
And Esposito, speaking last week, says he'll need to hire more employees if this pace continues.
Right now I had India call me yesterday and ask to price 500,000 and a million. I've had the same quantities requested from a national distributor out of New Jersey.
Esposito posted a YouTube video April 21st thanking Access for being the first to reach out and help with getting the face shield project off the ground and keep his company afloat.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
The future of horse racing at Saratoga this summer remains uncertain. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports on the latest developments.
On Wednesday, Governor Andrew Cuomo cast more uncertainty about live horse racing at Saratoga Racecourse this summer. With a meet scheduled to begin in July and the unpredictability of the coronavirus pandemic, the Democrat addressed the question of whether to reopen the summer tourism destination in his daily briefing. He warned that reopening attractions would draw large crowds of visitors from New York and beyond, creating issues for venues that likely will still be practicing some level of social distancing.
You know, how do you do 6 feet apart at the racetrack? How do you do 6 feet apart at the state fair? How do you do 6 feet apart at the racetrack or the state fair when you have double the attendance you've ever had and people are all crammed in there, you know? So I think it would have to be a statewide opening, coordinate with Connecticut, coordinate with Jersey. Otherwise, you will have a much, much more dense situation if you wind up being the only attraction in town.
Cuomo earlier this week suggested that large-scale sports events could consider how to operate without fans in the stands. The New York Racing Association, which operates Saratoga Racecourse, ran races at Aqueduct closed to spectators and has put in place safety protocols during the training season at Belmont Park. Right now, the opening of the Oklahoma training track at Saratoga Racecourse remains postponed. With the summer meet set to begin July 16th, NYRA is considering running races at Saratoga without fans. In an email, NYRA spokesman Patrick McKenna said in part, quote, "By closing to the public, layering additional health and safety protocols to our ongoing practices, and reducing the number of employees on property, NYRA is in a position to provide a small sense of normalcy for fans across the country who can watch on television and online. At the same time, this model will enable NYRA to preserve its ability to serve as the cornerstone of an industry that generates more than 19,000 jobs in New York and $3 billion in annual economic impact," end quote. Saratoga Springs Finance Commissioner Michelle Madigan estimates that the COVID-19 pandemic will impact city finances by $14 to $16 million, about a third of the annual budget. She said a racing season without fans would provide some revenue,
but it's not going to be enough to help me plug a $14 to $16 million revenue hole.
Right now, the city of Saratoga Springs is redoing the budget. Madigan has asked all city departments to find ways to cut expenses by 10%.
And that's just the first step that we're looking at to reduce expenses for 2020.
Madigan will reveal more details at next Tuesday's city council meeting. Recently, Governor Cuomo proposed $10 billion in cuts to the current state budget, including about $8 billion in local aid. Cuomo has warned that without federal stimulus funding to state and local governments, education and public services would take significant cuts. Saratoga Springs Mayor Meg Kelly says the city is in the same spot as many other communities seeking federal aid.
We're here. We're running cities, and yet you have to help us out financially, or we will have bigger problems than we have right now. But hopefully we won't get to that with getting this virus under control, and then we can start to open back up and get people back into the city and the city moving in the right direction again.
The opening of Saratoga Racecourse is 11 weeks away. At a time when public health concerns and measures can change by the day, Saratoga County Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Todd Shimkus said it's too early to make a prediction of when things will turn around for a normal summer tourism season.
We don't just want the track to open. We want SPAC to be open. We want the city center to be open. We want the athletic fields to be open. Those bring in visitors and tourists. We want the canal to be open. But all of these have to wait. They all have to wait until it's safe for them to be open. And when it's safe, when we can do it in a healthy way, let's make sure we do it right.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New funding is available for local history museums and organizations in New York that are struggling during the COVID-19 pandemic, the Legislative Gazette's Jesse King reports.
The William G. Pomeroy Foundation is teaming up with the Museum Association of New York to provide the funding. Pomeroy Foundation Executive Director Paula Miller says the $50,000 Pomeroy Fund for New York State History is designed to prevent local museums from falling through the cracks. She directs any interested 501c3 history organization with a budget of less than $100,000 to apply via the MANI website through April 27th.
We're going to award grants ranging between $1,000 and $2,000. to help with things such as paying utility bills, securing facilities, purchasing computer equipment, or, you know, more internet access. You know, everyone's doing virtual meetings now, right, and trying to showcase their digital collections and stay in touch with their members through social media, things that, you know, maybe many of these smaller organizations have not necessarily had to do in the past.
Miller expects the grants to be delivered by mid-May. Manny Executive Director Erica Sanger says applicants don't have to belong to Manny to qualify. Although she is careful not to mention specific applicants, Sanger said places like Albany's historic Cherry Hill and the Chapman Historical Museum in Glens Falls could fit the bill. In fact, she says half of the state's 1,400 museums operate under an annual budget of less than $100,000. Their small size has ironically excluded them from the federal government's numerous coronavirus aid packages. Congress approved a $484 billion bill shoring up funding for small businesses and hospitals Thursday, but Sanger says many of these sites don't have the full-time staff needed to qualify for loans like the Paycheck Protection Program.
The ratio of full-time to part-time staff at organizations with operating budgets under $100,000 is 1 to 5. So for every organization that has one full-time staff, there are 5 organizations that have part-time staff.
Sanger adds most smaller organizations don't receive regular federal funding in the first place, prompting agencies like the National Endowment for the Arts to vet them from emergency funding applications in advance. Furthermore, in its latest report on the state of New York museums, Manny says only 2% of small museums received state funding in 2018, and none received money from regional economic development councils in the 5 years prior. Sanger says 38% of these sites closed in 2018 due to financial deficits, and she worries more will follow with the spring's galas, school trips, and fundraisers canceled by COVID-19.
Two-thirds of the revenue that museums are anticipating in any point in time is gone. We know that more than half of the people who work in museums in New York State have been furloughed or laid off. I know of at least 3 museums whose board said they will not be able to open again. And one of them is in the Capital Region. So this impact is hard, it's deep, it's catastrophic.
As of Monday, Sanger says the Pomeroy Fund for New York State History already had nearly 50 applications. She encourages those who want to help out to reach out to their local museums. Many still have online gift shops, are taking donations, and can offer safe ways to volunteer during the pandemic.
It could be as simple as, hey, can you drive by and make sure everything's okay, right? Can you make sure that there are no broken windows and that everything looks okay?
For more information on the fund and a link to apply, go to WAMC.org. Based in Syracuse, the Pomeroy Foundation has funded over 1,000 roadside markers and plaques denoting historic sites across the country. The Museum Association of New York has over 670 members statewide. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
Last week marked the 50th anniversary of Earth Day, and some environmental advocates in New York took the opportunity to praise the progress that has been made in the state. But others took a broader assessment and fear any progress over the past 5 decades is being dismantled by the Trump administration. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports.
Several groups, including the Sierra Club Atlantic Chapter, NYPERG, Scenic Hudson, and We Act for Environmental Justice, held a Zoom meeting to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Earth Day and look back at New York's environmental history. The Nature Conservancy's New York Policy Director, Jessica Otney-Mahar, praised the state's foresight in creating the New York Environmental Protection Fund.
The Environmental Protection Fund, which was created in 1993, 27 years ago, has grown from just about $30 million then to $300 million today. It protects clean water, clean air, and healthy food. It also provides open spaces to our communities. The EPF also creates jobs and contributes hundreds of millions of dollars to New York's economy.
Some advocates worry that the White House is destroying all environmental progress made over the past 50 years, including Environmental Advocates of New York Executive Director Peter Iwanowitz.
They are gutting Clean Air Act standards. They are eviscerating clean water protections. And most egregiously, during the COVID-19 crisis, they have used that crisis to roll back bedrock standards. It's really egregious, the types of rollbacks that they've done throughout their tenure in this administration. But most acutely, what's been so egregious is that they've used the COVID-19 crisis to roll back clean air standards and turn a blind eye to medical evidence that suggests that we should have more protective health standards for the pollution that you and I are breathing in.
The Adirondack Council lists six key rollbacks the Trump administration is making while the country is distracted by the COVID-19 pandemic. Executive Director Willie Janeway says they are mounting a campaign to call attention to the actions.
It's almost as if someone thought we wouldn't notice. Those six items, the fuel economy standard, rollback, the temporary loosening of enforcement for air pollution, suggesting we no longer have to worry about the impacts of the climate crisis, no longer enforcing some of the rules to protect wildlife and endangered species, changing the rulemaking on mercury, easing up on coal plants, toxic ash, and you know, it just goes on and on. And I'm hoping that on Earth Day, people not only celebrated 50 years of progress, the bald eagle back in the Adirondacks, the peregrine falcon back, acid rain turned back, but that people used Earth Day to recommit, making sure we turn back these mistaken policies.
Iwanowitz says the administration cannot be allowed to unilaterally roll back 50 years of progress towards a healthier environment.
And I think what we want to do is inspire activism that ensures that the promises of our bedrock environmental laws that were put on the books in response to the first Earth Day are actually achieved.
For his part, President Trump has defended the policies as important steps in unshackling business and manufacturing. There are links to more information at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 2018, or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.